are listening to True Crime Twins, a true crime podcast hosted by Chloe and Melina Cantor. True Crime Twins is distributed by Glassbox Media and is part of the Crawlspace Media family. Welcome back to True Crime Twins, where we use our academic and occupational backgrounds in criminology and medicine to tell you crime stories. I'm Chloe, here with Melina, to tell you the story of the tragic killing of Katie Erin Palmer. Katie was born in 1981 in Texas and died on Earth Day, April 22nd, 2020, the day after she and her husband were struck from behind by a negligent driver as they took a walk in their neighborhood. She leaves behind her loving husband, John, and her two children, Bella and Brandon. She was a resident of Denison, Texas, and worked as a middle school science teacher. Despite the fact that Katie was killed as a result of being a victim of a crime, no justice has been served in her killing. Today, we are joined by her husband, John, as he details his fight for justice.
Katie was my wife. She was exceptional. She was beautiful both inside and out. She was a lover of science and nature. She taught middle school science at Scott Middle School, which is a middle school here in Denison, Texas, where we live. Loved those kids like they were her own. Excelled at being a teacher. She was teacher of the year at her campus numerous times. She was a great teacher, but she always told me that her most important job was being a mom. She loved our two kids, Bella and Brandon. Absolutely adored them. Very family-centric. Her mom was her best friend. She talked to her dad every single day. Kind, courteous, loved the outdoors. Just a kind and genuine person that was taken from us way too soon. I graduated from college a year before she did. We both met at Austin College, which is a college in Sherman, Texas, which is the town directly south of us. And we met, she was a biology major, loved ornithology as well, studying birds. When I got out, I went to go work in Dallas, and she graduated a year later, and she started to work on getting her teaching license. And back then, you had to teach for a year under like a provisional license, and then you would be able to get your teaching license. I decided to join the military, and we were still dating. We ended up getting engaged prior to me shipping out. I was then stationed in Gulfport, Mississippi, and she put her teaching on hold for me. She moved out to Mississippi. Again, just another quality of Katie, very selfless. So she stopped what she was doing in order to come with me. And then after we had kids and our kids were able to go to kindergarten, Katie started to substitute teach, and then she got a full-time job at the very school district that she graduated from. I think we coached about every single sport that our kids played in, whether it was softball, basketball, baseball, soccer, everything. During the summers, Katie was taking the kids when she was off to various sports camps, traveling, doing everything. She was very involved. Man, exceptional mother, exceptional. Nobody ever spoke ill of her. She never spoke ill of anybody else. As a teacher, it's very hard for teachers to leave everything that's happened at school at school. When I say that Katie cared for those kids like they were her own, she'd bring food up to the school. You know, if there were kids in her class that were hungry, she had food for them. If there were kids that were going without, as far as, you know, clothes, she brought clothes up to the school, make sure that, you know, if there was any kids that didn't have coats or any warm weather clothes or just clothes in general, she would always call her mom, Rhonda, and Rhonda would go run to Walmart or Target and get clothes in bulk. Katie would make sure that these kids had clothes. Last year, Scott Middle School, where she taught, renovated a room. stocked it full of the essential supplies and clothing for these kids that were going without. And they named that Katie's Closet.
So your children were preteen, teenaged when she was killed. How many years total were you guys together?
We started dating back in 2001 and then got married in 2004. I guess, gosh, that's 19, 20 years. And at that point, I had been with her more than I hadn't, whether it was dating or married, for more than half my life. And having somebody ripped away from you, stolen from you in the manner that she was taken from us, needless to say, that left a pretty big hole. Left a pretty big hole in me, left a pretty big hole in our family, but just devastated our kids. You can only imagine being a kid at that age, going to sleep one night and waking up to your grandmother running into the house telling you that both your parents had been hit by a truck and she has no clue what condition we're in, but they needed to get the clothes on and that they needed to go. My daughter, from what my mother-in-law told me, started yelling for her mom, Katie, and ran into our room looking for her. That's going to leave a lasting impact on them. None of this is right or just, and we're still fighting that. But to go through what my kids have gone through and what they continue to go through is horrible. The man that killed Katie lived down our road. He recently moved about 6-8 months ago, but for roughly 2 years drove up and down our street. And we all knew his truck. For the longest time, he drove the same truck that took my wife's life. And for a couple weeks, still had the dent in the hood from where my wife's head hit. To be in our front yard and see that man drive back and forth multiple times a day, for our kids to ask the question of, why is he still driving? Why is he not locked up? I had those questions myself. And that just added to everything else that they were going through with the loss of their mother, the tragic sudden loss, and then to see the man that killed their mom still going on with his life while we're struggling to put ours together. What an injustice, man. What a complete injustice. And he moved actually into the city limits of Denison and now lives close to soccer fields where there are a lot of kids that are practicing soccer multiple days a week. And this man has a reputation and a history of driving while impaired. I think if the district attorney had done his job, Corey Foster would be in prison right now. And all those kids and all those families that are practicing soccer and doing what all families should be doing wouldn't be at risk. But every single day that Corey Foster is still driving around Great Grayson County, I believe we're all at risk. Absolutely.
You and your wife, Katie, were taking a walk when Corey Foster hit you both with his truck, killing her and injuring you. Why were there no consequences?
DPS that day failed. The investigating officer on scene was Tarif Al-Khatib. We would later find out that Tarif Al-Khatib was family friends with Corey Foster. We found pictures of the Fosters and the Al-Khatibs at Halloween party together months prior to Katie being killed and a Christmas party together months before Katie was killed. Basically, Tarif Al-Khatib's wife, arm in arm with Corey. The two wives were friends. They were hairdressers together. They had dressed up the same for this party with another group of women. These pictures, you know, pictures say 1,000 words. And these pictures show that there was definitely a connection between Corey Foster and Tarif Al-Khatib. Corey Foster blew a .06 in a portable breathalyzer test, okay? An hour after he hit us, an hour after he ran over my wife, and her body was care flighted to Plano, which is the trauma center in this region. That's where she was sent. An hour after he did that, he was given a portable breathalyzer test and blew a .06, okay? He told another trooper, hey, this guy PBT'd at a .06. The trooper asked Tarif, are you going to get blood? And Tarif declined. Now, a portable breathalyzer test is not admissible in criminal court in the state of Texas. It's not. You have to have a blood test. So instead of driving Corey Foster to the hospital for a blood test, Tarif loaded him up in his unit with his loaded handguns that he had in his car and drove him to his house. Never asked him for a blood test. And as per body camera footage, never called a judge to ask for a warrant. Never did any of these things. In addition to that, he never marked the scene of the crime. DPS's excuse for that is because the truck was moved, our shoes that we got knocked out of were moved, our bodies were moved, but there were people there that knew exactly where everything was. There was a neighbor that was across the street that heard the impact and knew exactly where Corey's truck was when he came to a rolling stop. And again, didn't slam on his brakes, but came to a rolling stop. The truck could have been marked. Our bodies could have been marked. Our shoes from where they were hit off our body could have been marked. But Tarif Al-Khatib did not do that. He did not do his job. His sole job that day was to collect evidence. And he did not. He did not take adequate pictures. Again, did not mark the scene. Did not talk to anybody else on site that was there before he arrived for any information or to gather what kind of mental state Corey Foster was in soon after hitting us. So basically, he failed at doing his job. The DA, Brett Smith, is related to Tarif Al-Khatib by marriage. And Brett Smith also represented the Foster family in a previous DWI before coming district attorney. That was not released to us. So we've got a DPS officer that didn't do his job, a DA who's related by marriage to the DPS officer, and a DA who represented this man's family in a DWI. There is nothing that has been impartial at all. From the get-go, we were already behind the eight ball in getting justice. Okay, the DA should recuse himself. Tarif and his relationship with Corey Foster, Tarif should have recused himself and had one of the other two troopers on scene take over this investigation, or at least conduct an investigation, because really wasn't one done. The fault at not getting justice lies with the DA and with DPS. The existing relationships, the lack of an investigation, and the complete and utter failure by Brett Smith, again, our district attorney, and his office. Our case was brought to a grand jury twice. The first grand jury, there were 10 grand jurors. A grand jury consists of 12. One person called in sick, another person recused himself, and no alternates were made available at all. When I asked the prosecutor why this was, he shrugged his shoulders and said that he didn't know. The first grand jury, I testified. Tarif Al-Khatib testified, and because DPS, which is Texas State Police, did not recreate the crash, Grayson County had a third party come in and recreate the crash. And somebody from this company testified as well. Jury came back and no-billed this. So the phone records for Corey Foster were never requested by the DA's office, never. And there was a report by that third party that was damning against Corey Foster. Very damning. That was not finalized until 6 days after the grand jury. So the DA did not have all the evidence to present to a grand jury. 18 months later, through our civil discovery process, because we have a civil suit with Corey Foster, our lawyer obtained his cell phone records. And by analyzing these cell phone records and his statements to DPS, Corey Foster was manually dialing a number as he crossed over the roadway and hit us from behind. And that also adds distracted driving onto the charges. Okay. We presented this to the DA's office again 18 months later and asked them why they never requested cell phone records. They put that blame on us, stating that we wanted this to go in front of a grand jury. And we were pushing them real hard. And so they just went ahead and presented it to a grand jury. Well, they didn't do their job. They didn't have all the evidence. They didn't have the cell phone records, nor did they have this report from this third party. So DA's office reviewed the cell phone records, stated that there was enough to go in front of another grand jury. And from what I was told by Carrie Ashmore, who's the first assistant district attorney of Grayson County, is that he would present these cell phone records to the grand jury. And then if they had anything else that they wanted to review, they would provide that to him. Now, I want to make sure that you know that this is another grand jury. This is not the same grand jury. So it confused me because all you're going to do is present these cell phone records to this grand jury. What other evidence is going to be provided? They also would not let me testify. I got to testify at the first grand jury. They would not allow me to testify. I got a call from Carrie Ashmore at 4:30 the day before. And that's when he told me that they were going to present this in front of the grand jury the next day. So he called me at the end of the day prior. And so that didn't seem right at all. It seemed like things were being rushed. I didn't understand why I was not going to be allowed to testify. I tried to call him back numerous times. He wouldn't answer. I left a message for the district attorney at 6 a.m. the next morning after going back and forth with Carrie on text message where I asked him not to present this in front of the grand jury unless it's going to be presented in its entirety and I'm going to be allowed to testify as well. He did not respond to it. So Rhonda Nail, who's Katie's mother, her and I both showed up at about 7:45 the next morning, requested to speak to the DA, Brett Smith, and to Carrie Ashmore. They would not see us. We watched all the grand jurors file in. Next thing we know, Carrie Ashmore's walking out and says it's in the hands of the grand jury. And we asked him why. Why would you present this case like this? Why weren't we allowed to testify? What evidence was provided? Did you show them the third-party report? Did you present them everything else that you did in the first grand jury? And he looked at Katie's mom, Rhonda, and said, I'm damn good at my job, and I don't have to explain myself. He walked back into his office. 20, 30 minutes later, Carrie Ashmore comes out, tells us that the grand jury declined to move forward, at which point I had 18 months of anger and frustration that I let out on Carrie Ashmore. Meant every single word that came out of my mouth that morning in the Grayson County Justice Center. So the DA's office failed us twice. They did two half-assed grand juries with half of the evidence being presented at the first grand jury and then half the evidence at the second grand jury. Long answer to a short question. Systematic failure of the Grayson County justice system starting from day one. From DPS and their, and I'll put this in quote, investigation, all the way to the mishandling of our case by the Grayson County District Attorney's Office. That's why Corey Foster has yet to be held accountable for his reckless actions that killed Katie Palmer.
And now, a quick word from our sponsors. Thanks for listening to our sponsors. Now back to the show. With the state trooper and the DA both having this conflict of interest with Corey Foster, you would think that they'd be very careful with how they were acting. They would, like you said, recuse themselves. They would be conscious of not just a conflict of interest, but the appearance of one. But it seems that's not a concern to either one of them. They are just willing to do whatever is in their power to make this go away for Foster. And I am wondering, what's the next step? Because it's like these powers that be aren't being cooperative or helpful to you.
So we recently had a meeting, and we had a meeting yesterday with the chief of the Texas Highway Patrol. And there's some additional information that we've requested from them because when it comes to Tarif and it comes to any type of accountability that DPS would hold Tarif accountable to, DPS investigates DPS, and we submit a complaint. So DPS takes that, DPS gathers evidence, DPS internally reviews the evidence, DPS comes up with their punishment for Tarif, who is also DPS, and then DPS punishes Tarif, but DPS cannot release any of the evidence that they reviewed to us, cannot release to us what he was found in violation of, and then can also not release to us what type of reprimand that he got. So we had a meeting with the chief of Texas Highway Patrol. that's basically how they describe the whole scenario to us. Obviously not in those words, but it is what it is. DPS investigates DPS, then holds DPS accountable. And there's been no accountability at all. There's some other documents that we're going to receive from the Department of Public Safety. And hopefully that sheds light on all the bad actors in this injustice that we continue to fight. As far as Brett Smith goes, there's some documents that we're waiting to obtain. I don't believe that Brett Smith has been 100% honest with us and with other entities that have investigated this matter. We're waiting for those records to be provided to us, at which point we can see which direction that we need to go. Brett's an elected official, so Brett's our district attorney. I ran into Brett about 4 months ago at his office and face-to-face told him that I was going to make sure that he was no longer district attorney of Grayson County, that I do everything within my power to make sure that he no longer held that position. I don't want what happened to our family in this county to happen to another family. And that goes the same for DPS as well. I don't believe Tarif Al-Khatib should be a trooper. I don't want him to abuse what power he has in order to benefit a friend, to basically let a friend get away with murder. That's not what law enforcement is. It's not. I grew up respecting law enforcement. I was in the military. I've got a lot of guys that I served with went into law enforcement. I grew up in a family that greatly valued what law enforcement does. There are protectors. 99.9% of law enforcement does the right thing. It's the 0.01% that paints law enforcement with a broad stroke. And that's what Al-Khatib has done in this matter. He has greatly stained the reputation of DPS. I'm going to keep on doing everything I can to be vigilant on Tarif. And I want Tarif moved out of this county. I want Tarif gone from DPS. I don't believe that he should be an officer anymore. But I also don't want anything like this ever to happen to anybody in our county, or to be honest with you, in the state of Texas. And right now, we're trying to figure out which direction that we need to go. But I can promise you this, we'll find our direction, and we're not going to stop. We're not going to stop until we get justice and until there's accountability. We're not.
The injustice that you and your family have experienced as a direct result of corruption by people in power, it is indescribably maddening to think about what you all have gone through and what you must be experiencing internally when such unfairness happens regarding someone you love so much. When is Brett Smith's next election?
2024. So that campaign cycle will probably begin a year from now. So our goal will be to identify a good candidate that would run against Brett and absolutely support that candidate with everything that we have. You know, Brett has continued to be non-transparent, continued to not hold those accountable that need to be accountable for their actions. Again, accountable. There's just a common theme with him. It's lack of accountability and not being transparent. Those are two traits that are inexcusable, should not be something that a district attorney is known for, but through just our interactions with Brett, he's unfit to hold this office. And if it's happened to our family, how many other families has this happened to? So we've been proactive so far. We've put up billboards throughout Grayson County, put up big help wanted signs for a new Grayson County district attorney. So we're going to do everything we can to make sure that Brett is no longer burdened with being transparent or accountable, and we're going to get him out of office.
Anyone who acts like this and abuses their power like this needs to get out of office immediately, because it's so harmful and it's so dangerous. And I think he's going to lose in 2024.
I guarantee that he will. He absolutely will. There is such just a groundswell of support from this community for change. We had a county judge, Bill Majors, that was a bad actor. And he was a two-time county judge, a three-time mayor of Sherman, which is the county seat here in Grayson County. Again, probably the most entrenched politician here in Grayson County. And this community was tired of all his past transgressions, as far as he had 4 DWIs. Most recently, while serving as county judge, was arrested for a DWI where he was 3.5 times over the Texas legal limit. He hit a light pole and then drove across the highway, putting everybody in danger. Our local system here in Grayson County, including our district attorney, Brett Smith, who refused to prosecute him. In fact, he recused himself from that case. Our local system here tried to sweep this underneath the rug. Bill got a slap on the wrist. He paid a fine and had, I believe, 6 months of probation. Our community looked at this. They're tired of it. They're tired of the system that we have and demanded accountability. And Bill Majors lost his reelection in a landslide, roughly 13,000 votes to 6,000 votes. Our community has seen what Brett Smith has and hasn't done. And I believe Brett Smith is going to reach the same outcome as Bill. And Brett will be known as the former district attorney of Grayson County.
I imagine your civil case, and I'm curious about the status of that and how that's going, the evidence that it's already uncovered and may continue to uncover, how that could contribute to a new case being brought before a grand jury.
Right now, we're going through the discovery process still, and then we've got depositions that were supposed to be held next week, but Corey Foster's attorneys have yet again pushed that back. So I believe once we get, I would hope that there would be more evidence that we could get from the civil discovery and civil trial that we could then represent to our district attorney's office and have them put this back in front of a grand jury again, which I hate saying the word again, because there was enough evidence that if it was properly presented and properly gathered, then I believe that this would have just taken one competent prosecutor in one grand jury. And I believe Corey Foster, I don't think we would be talking right now. I believe Corey Foster would be in prison. So again, we're going to wait to see how the civil process plays out. And with any evidence that's gathered, if it's going to be helpful securing the prosecution of Corey Foster in a criminal court, then we'll absolutely provide that to the Grayson County District Attorney's Office. Absolutely.
Is it known how fast Foster was driving at the time?
When Corey hit us, he was driving a 6,000-pound truck. So when he hit us, the front sensor did not go off. Even though Katie's body got wrapped around the hood of his car, her head put a huge dent in the hood, there was not anything recorded internally on that truck that would provide us with speed. So what would normally happen in an accident, you've got that little black box that records all the data for the vehicle. If there's a big enough impact, or if there is a rapid deceleration, then that black box would record the speed. But Katie was not a big enough impact. And Corey did not slam on his brakes when he hit us. Corey hit us and then came to a gradual stop. Okay. So it was not recorded there. Troopers on scene joked about how fast Corey was going. One trooper stated, Corey said he was going 15 miles per hour. Now, 15 miles per hour is not going to throw us 70 feet. One trooper stated that Corey was going 15 miles per hour. Well, Al Khatib and another trooper started laughing, and they both agreed that he had to have been going at least 50. And that never made it into the report. And because of the poor job that DPS did that day in their investigation, i.e. not marking the scene or taking adequate pictures or talking to anybody that was on scene that could have said the bodies were here, the truck was here, the shoes were here, that hurt that third party trying to recreate this crash because they didn't have any points of reference. They only had to go by the horrible pictures that DPS took that day. They estimated that the truck could have been going anywhere from 33 to 43 miles per hour, but they won't know for sure because, again, DPS did not do their job. And just to let you know, the posted speed limit is 30.
He broke your back, right?
I had 3 fractured vertebrae. I had multiple broke ribs, and I had internal bruising of organs. Yes.
And do you have long-term effects from those injuries?
None that I know of now, no. I was in the ICU and they wanted to keep me there for a couple more days. I had to leave the hospital. You know, I had 2 kids that the day before had been driven down to Plano to go say goodbye to their mom, and I wasn't there with them. I could not be with them on the worst day of their life. I was stuck in a hospital room, and my kids were 70 miles away saying their goodbyes. I couldn't stay in that hospital any longer the next day. I asked to be discharged, and they understood I had to be there with my kids. I recovered. I don't have any long-term effects that I've noticed now, other than, of course, emotionally. That's all.
This man is day drinking. He reeks of alcohol, according to the cops that were there. He's on his phone, driving probably at least, like you said, 40 miles per hour. And he has no justice. He didn't even lose his license. Did he ever say sorry to you?
About a week after this happened, I got a phone call from him. Okay. I let it go to voicemail, and a very intoxicated Corey Foster left me a message saying how sorry he was and how hard this was on him. That wasn't an apology. That was somebody who was feeling sorry for themselves and was under the influence of alcohol and called me and just thought that him calling me and telling me sorry while he was drunk at about 10 o'clock at night was going to be sufficient, was going to somehow, I don't think he had any worry about how my family was feeling. I think he was feeling sorry for himself. And again, that's not an apology. An apology is not made at 10 p.m. at night when you're drunk. So have I gotten an apology from Corey? No. Did at any time while he was on scene on body camera, you know how many times he asked how Katie was?
Zero.
Zero. Who does that?
Somebody with absolutely no conscience.
I don't know about you, but if I was involved in an accident where I've got a medical evac helicopter that has landed, I've got a woman who is being transported on a gurney to that helicopter, I've got three state troopers, I've got probably 10 or 12 EMTs and firefighters there, and not once did he ask how Katie was doing. If that was me, I don't know if I could complete a sentence. I think I'd be so distraught at the fact that I've killed somebody. I've hurt somebody. I caused this. He was more concerned about when he was going to get his truck back. He was more concerned if he could go and get some insurance documents in his car. He was more concerned on when his truck would be released than he was with how Katie was doing. Never once asked. That just shows you what his mental state was that day. We all know that he was under the influence of alcohol, but he was emotionally flat. The only emotions that he showed that day was laughter when he failed his one-legged stand test. And then when the troopers asked him if he had any weapons in his truck, he said, yes, I have two Glocks. And they asked him, are they loaded? And he laughed and said they wouldn't be useful if they weren't. And they all had a big laugh. So it angers me. It angers me that he didn't care. He didn't care what he did because his whole life, he's had people that have taken care of it for him. If you look at his arrest record, you know, he's got PIs, he's got some that were DWIs that were turned into PIs, reckless driving, speeding. It's just a guy that's never been held accountable. And this is what happens when you have somebody who's got a lifetime of never, ever having to answer for their own actions, never being held accountable. All that adds up. All that adds up. And the end result for this man's reckless actions for 30 years and on April 21st, 2020, all of that and his reckless actions on the day that my wife and I went for a walk resulted in Katie Palmer never walking through our front door again, resulted in our kids being woken up by their grandmother stating that, I don't know if your mom is alive or dead, but we have to go. That's what happens. That's why accountability matters.
What does justice look like? What do you think Foster deserves?
Oh, I think Foster deserves to go to prison. That's justice. But I'll back that up. Justice for us would be our day in criminal court. that would be justice. We all know that the district attorney can't just arbitrarily put somebody in prison. Justice for us would be Corey Foster in a criminal court. And justice for us would be a full, fair, and impartial jury to hear this in a criminal court. Now, what the jury does with that, that's up to the jury. Obviously, we don't control that. We obviously don't control how the prosecutor wants to present the case. And we know this because of Kerry Ashmore's incompetence. So I think if we had a competent prosecutor and a full and impartial grand jury, and this case was presented in a criminal court, that would be justice. I think Sharif Al-Khatib, at the minimum, not being a trooper in this county, would be justice. I believe Sharif Al-Khatib should not be a trooper at all. I know DPS is probably not going to fire Sharif, but Sharif does not need to be here. It's apparent with the district attorney, with Corey Foster, Sharif can't do his job here. He can't. He can't be impartial. He can't do his job. Justice, again, would be Brett Smith, being known as former district attorney of Grayson County, Brett Smith.
What can our listeners, your fellow citizens, what can we do to help you get justice?
We have a Facebook page, Justice for Katie Palmer. I would ask that they join that and they follow that. We are planning on putting on another call to action very, very soon. We're waiting for some additional documents back. And at that point, that's going to decide what our call to action is going to be. So we would appreciate anybody and everybody to stand with us, join us in our fight against this injustice, in our continued fight for justice for Katie Palmer. Anybody who had the relationship that I had with her, I consider myself lucky. Knew her for almost 20 years. We were married for 15, and there are people that have been married for 30, 40 years that didn't have what I had at 15 years. I'm just so blessed and I'm so lucky to have known her. It's not a damn thing I wouldn't do for her, dead or alive. She was special. And I think that when you find that, and you find that one person that you connect with, that it's nothing that you wouldn't do to make sure that they were treated the right way. And she absolutely was not. I'm going to keep going. I don't care if this takes me 8 years, 9 years, however long, I'll get justice for her.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of True Crime Twins. You can follow us on social media. On TikTok and Twitter, we are at True Crime Twins. On Instagram, we are at True Crime Twins Podcast. You can also email with questions, comments, case suggestions at truecrimetwinspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for joining us for our new release day, which is every Wednesday.